Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Parvatikacharya, also Teta Satashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Savaya, Chananad Bhaktivananda, Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON, Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti, Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya, Shilohidas Thakur Kijai, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Gajai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Gajai Vrindavanam Gajai Maturam Gajai Chakradasami Gajai Yamanamai Gajai Shimadalasi Devi Gajai, Sapaveda Bhakta, Vrinda Gajai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories, the assembled devotees, all glories, the assembled devotees, all glories, the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada, Gajai. So, Om Gana Tivadanda Shah, Gananjana, Shalakya, Chakshur, Unmeditam, Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So again, I'd like to welcome everybody to our Bhagavad Gita study, and we're going to continue with Chapter 3 tonight. Just a few words before we go on to the Bhagavad Gita. Today in Nugaloka, I'm not sure if it's the same everywhere you are, everywhere everyone is. Today was Ekadashi, what's called the Pandava Nujala Ekadasi. So today for chanting and hearing and increasing your chanting and hearing of Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes, devotees' pastimes, and the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Krishna's philosophy. So it's a very, very special day. I was able, so far, to chant 65 rounds today. Now the reason I'm mentioning that is not that I'm bragging, is that I'm trying to give a hint to all of you how to chant more japa. And one of the main hints I'm going to give tonight is called early to bed, early to rise, makes a devotee healthy, wealthy, wise, and Krishna conscious. So I know that many of you, I know I'm preaching right now, but I know that many of you are adapted to the schedule of staying up late every night, because for all of you, you know, late night is a fun time when you have home programs or whatever happens at night. But to really make rapid progress in Krishna consciousness, it is required in most cases to wake up early. And that's hard. I mean, because I came from a background in which I took rest late every night, like the rest of you do, or most of you do. I mean, I was taking rest at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, because I was a university student. And I had to make the rapid adjustment as soon as I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, and I'm happy I did. And right now I have this habit of getting up early, and I'm very happy I have that habit, because I have concentrated sadhana every morning. Usually in the morning, actually this morning before Mangalarti, I had all my rounds done, and right after Mangalarti did my deity worship, which is on the internet for everyone to see, Facebook page for everyone to see. And then there was plenty of time for hearing and chanting the rest of the day and completing whatever rounds I was chanting today. So early morning is very important. It's a time that's in the mode of goodness, and it's a hard adjustment to make. However, by the mercy of the coronavirus, many of us are being given that opportunity. What do I mean by that? Because really, you're not supposed to have like social gatherings or anything like that. You're at home. So being at home, you actually have more control over your life than when you were having all these different programs, or I was having all these programs in different places. You know, you can actually set a schedule. And if you can do it, taking rest early and waking up early is extremely helpful. And if we can break the habit in our community of these late night programs, you know, it's a habit. It's a habit. And like any other habit, it can be broken. It will go a long way towards our connecting in a more deeper way to Krishna. So we can take advantage of this time, the coronavirus time, where we are isolated to a certain extent, and we do have more control over our personal lives. Okay, with that happy announcement, which will, I'm sure, be threatening to most of you, we're going to start the Bhagavad Gita discussion. And here we are on chapter 3. Chapter 3, of course, is called Karma Yoga. Now, before we start chapter 3, I want to explain what the word karma yoga means, so you all can understand that before we read these verses. Karma yoga is two words. Karma refers to, in this particular case, work. In other contexts, the word karma can refer to a reaction you get for doing something. Like sometimes someone will have something happen to them and you will say, "That's your karma, buddy." So that's another meaning of the word karma. So in this particular case, it means to work. And yoga means connect with Krishna. Or reconnect with Krishna, but actually connect with Krishna. That's the literal translation of the word yoga, which we've described before. It comes from the Sanskrit root yuj, which means to connect, or yukta, which is very similar. It has many words that are very much connected, or connected, very much, yes, they're connected to that particular word, etymologically. So karma yoga means to connect to Krishna through work. Very easy to understand. So, and karma yoga is part of bhakti yoga. Although one can be doing karma yoga without bhakti yoga, but one cannot do bhakti yoga without karma yoga. What I mean by that is that bhakti yoga means to actually develop the consciousness of loving Krishna. So when you're developing the consciousness of loving Krishna, you're also working for Krishna. Because if you want to love someone, if you are loving someone, you probably do what they say. Otherwise, you know, what's the meaning of the word love? So that's bhakti yoga. So karma yoga just means working for Krishna. So people can work for Krishna without developing love for Krishna. That can be done. And it's very good, because in one day they will come to the platform of loving Krishna or doing the sadhana to develop love for Krishna. So karma yoga means doing work or giving up the fruits of work for Krishna. So with that brief introduction, we are going to read about the chapter. Everyone must engage in some sort of activity in this material world, but actions can either bind one to this world or liberate one from it. By acting for the pleasure of the Supreme without selfish motives, one can be liberated from the law of karma, action and reaction, and attain transcendental knowledge of the Self and the Supreme. Brief introduction to the chapter. Text 1. So, went too far. Arjuna Vacha Jayasi Chet Karmanaste Mata Budir Janardana Tatkim Karmani Gore Mam Niyo Jayasi Keshava. Arjuna Vacha, Arjuna said, Jayasi is better. Chet if Karmanaha, then fruit of action. Te Vayu Mata is considered Buddhi, intelligence. Janardana, Krishna, tat, therefore, kim, why, karmani, in action, gore, ghastly, bomb, me, niyojayasi, you are engaging Keshava, Krishna. So translation, Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruit of work? So Arjuna is making some mistakes here, because Krishna gave some gyan, talking about the intelligence, controlling the mind with your intelligence, the mind controls the senses. Yeah, the second chapter like that, you're not the body, etc., like that. So, first of all, he's heard all this philosophy, and he thinks, well, it's good to be a philosopher. And he's confusing fruit of work with what, or confusing what Krishna is telling him to do, that is fight, with fruit of work. Doesn't quite understand the philosophy, because fruit of work means work that has some material fruit, a work that you do for yourself, and work that has a karmic reaction to it. So he doesn't really understand the philosophy quite yet. So purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the previous chapter with a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief. And the path of realization has been recommended. Buddhi yoga, or Krishna consciousness. Remember, we describe yoga is to connect. Buddhi is your intelligence. Use your intelligence, your higher self, to control your lower self. So this is what's confusing Arjuna. Sometimes Krishna consciousness is misunderstood to be inertia. So that's what Arjuna is thinking. And one with such a misunderstanding often withdraws to a secluded place to become fully Krishna conscious by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. But without being trained in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it is not advisable to chant the holy name of Krishna in a secluded place where one may acquire only cheap adoration from the innocent public. I mean, sometimes one goes to a secluded place just to escape. And not only do devotees do that, but also people who are not devotees, people who are Mayavadis and personalists, they just want to escape from this world, because this world does have some concomitant miseries. So they use Krishna consciousness to escape from this world, which is actually called mukti. And we gave that quote the other day, that if one is aspiring for mukti or liberation, he or she will not be peaceful. And sometimes people just sit down in a holy place just so that people will worship them. Oh, what a great saintly person that is. He's just chanting. But little do they know what's going on in the mind of that so-called great saintly person. So Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness or Buddhi yoga or intelligent spiritual advancement as knowledge of something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. Now, also remember, Arjuna's position or his culture at that particular time was that there were many of these sages who were doing that. Nowadays, you don't find that so much. I mean, there's some monasteries, you know, monks or nuns in monasteries that are secluded. But generally, in America, haven't seen too many of those. I mean, I've seen some of them, but not so much. I mean, I used to visit a monastery and preach at a monastery until they kicked me out because some of them were becoming interested in Krishna consciousness. And it appeared like the monks were very secluded and, you know, very peaceful and everything like that. And every night they would watch football games together, and, you know, there was a, they were allowed to drink, not just a little beer, but, you know, other things. So it wasn't exactly a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to the best course of action. In other words, if you don't understand something, ask. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. In other words, if you want to be spiritual, it's required to use everything in Krishna's service. It's required to work for Krishna. And we find many, many people who, let's say, go to a sacred place or secluded place, and they do try to escape, and ultimately they're, let's say, trapped by the snares of sensory enjoyment again, because activity is required for the soul. Ultimately, you can restrict yourself for sense enjoyment for some time, but ultimately, you know, you're going to go for it again. Even if you rise to the level of Brahman, there was a verse that we read the other day, Aruya Krishna Param Padam, and then ultimately, even though you come down to engage in activities again. Okay, next verse. More space here. Vyamishreneva vakyena muri mohaya shiva me tarekam varanischitya yena shreyoham apnuyam. Vyamishrena, by equivocal eva, certainly, vakyena, words. Buddhim, intelligence, mohayasi, you are bewildering, eva, certainly, may my tat, therefore, ekam, only one, vada, please tell. Nischitcha, ascertaining yena, by which shreya, real benefit, aham, I, apnuyam, may have. Translation. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. In other words, equivocal means, you know, what are you saying? You're saying like contradictory instructions here. So I don't really know what you're saying. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Purport, in the previous chapter, as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained, such as Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga, just to reiterate, is the analysis of the material elements, the material world, and trying to understand and see the spirit above the material world and the super spirit, that is Krishna, beyond the material world. But first there must be an analysis. Sankhya means counting, and that's how one connects with Krishna. It's a different methodology. Buddhi yoga, by which you use your intelligence to control your senses and focus them on Krishna, which is what Prabhupada said. And control of the senses by intelligence, work without food of desire, that's karma yoga. And the position of the neophyte. This was all presented unsystematically. So the second chapter, you know, Krishna just throws out many of these concepts, which he actually ties together in these later chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. That's why the second chapter is actually like the summary of the whole Bhagavad Gita. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna therefore wanted to clear up these apparently confusing matters so that any common man could accept them without misinterpretation. Although Krishna had no intention of confusing Arjuna by any jugglery of words, Arjuna could not follow the process of Krishna consciousness either by inertia. Inertia means just staying still, not doing anything, or by active service. So he really didn't know what to do. In other words, by his questions, he was clearing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students who seriously want to understand the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita. One thing we should explain here is that Arjuna is a pure devotee. It's not that he's actually, you know, inherently in illusion, or by nature in illusion. But Krishna has put him into this apparent illusion, which is sometimes called yogamaya, so that the Bhagavad Gita will be spoken, so that we will have this knowledge. So in one sense, it's, you know, these are rhetorical questions, but Arjuna really is in this sort of like imitation illusion, with yogamaya illusion right now, so that we can hear the Bhagavad Gita. It's an important point. Let me just make this adjustment here. Hold on a second. I forgot to put everyone else on mute, which was actually an important point. Okay. So let's continue reading. So Krishna begins to speak here. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Lokesmin Vivedanishta Purvarukta Mayanaga Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. So Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Loke, in the world, as men, this Dvivida, two kinds of Nishta faith, pura, formerly, prokta, were said, maya, by me, anago, sinless one, jnana yogena, by the linking process of knowledge, sankhyanam, of the empiric philosophers, karma yogena, by the linking process of devotion, yoginam, of the devotees. So he's talking about, you know, three processes here, just before we go on to the translation, the direct translation. The process of jnana yoga, that means the same thing as buddhi yoga, where you link yourself by knowledge, and the process of sankhyanam, where they analyze this material world and hopefully ultimately come to the conclusion that there's a Supreme Lord beyond it. That's why Prabhupada said, of the empiric philosophers. Empiric philosophers means ones who think that everything to be considered real must be perceivable. How about that? That's the definition of empiric philosophers. And ultimately, you know, if you follow the path of Sankhya, you come to the conclusion there's God. Just like in a presentation we made almost a year ago, we showed that if one analyzes microbiology, very interesting presentation, everyone did it. If one analyzes microbiology, that is the biology of the cell, the cellular biology, one will see, especially in talking about the DNA, the RNA, and all these little factors like the kinases. I won't tell you what it is. Some later class I'll tell you what that is. If one sees and analyzes and looks or is aware of these things, one comes to the conclusion there must be God. Just like if you see something designed, like the computer I'm using, you come to the conclusion there's a designer, there's a builder, etc. Okay, and karma yogena, of course, refers to linking through working for Krishna. Okay, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I've already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. Obviously, it takes a lot longer by empirical philosophical speculation or by the Sankhya process, which is the Sankhya process, sorry. By the Sankhya process, which is empirical, and philosophical speculation is jnana yoga, it takes a lot longer than by devotional service. Devotional service is the quick path. And in the 12th chapter, when we get to that, it will explain that very nicely to us. Purport. In the second chapter, verse 39, the Lord explains two kinds of procedures, namely Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga, or Buddhi Yoga. In this verse, the Lord explains the same more clearly. Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of the nature of spirit and matter, is the subject matter for persons who are inclined to speculate and understand things by experimental knowledge and philosophy. So, experimental means things that you can perceive. And they use philosophy to come to a particular conclusion, to guess at a particular conclusion. Not necessarily to have perfect knowledge, because the system of philosophy, and experimental knowledge will not give you perfect knowledge. That is called anuman. Anuman means basically you examine the material world and you draw conclusions from your limited examinations. That's basically, it's a process that oftentimes is faulty because we cannot examine everything in the material world. So there may be some exceptions, just like people talk about the law of gravity. Is it a law? Or is it simply a description of what people perceive? And perhaps there is some aspects or places in the universe where the law of gravity doesn't work. And actually, we know about that through Einstein's theory of relativity, because he goes further into describing what gravity is and how gravity can be altered, etc. So anyway, so the point is experimental knowledge and philosophy cannot give you perfect knowledge. So ultimately, you have to come to the point of surrender or coming to Krishna. The other class of men work in Krishna consciousness, as explained in the 61st verse of the second chapter. The Lord has explained also in the 39th verse that by working by the principles of Bhuti Yoga or Krishna consciousness, one could be relieved from the bondage of action. And furthermore, there's no flaw in the process. The same principle is more clearly explained in the 61st verse, that this Bhuti Yoga is to depend entirely on the Supreme, or specifically, more specifically, on Krishna. And in this way, all the senses can be brought under control very easily. Therefore, both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Now, here's a famous quote of Prabhupada, often used. Religion without philosophy is sentiment, or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. And Prabhupada would say sometimes dry mental speculation. So in other words, we see both of these things manifest in the world. We have many people who are just like very religious, emotionally religious, we're talking about right now. And they don't ask the first question of religion, or first question of philosophy, which is, how do you know what you know? I'll give you an example. Okay. Many people, well, let's say of the Christian religion, they don't ask the question of why they believe what they believe in. For example, I'll give you an example. This is one I come across all the time. Many people who profess to be Christians say, animals have no souls. They just come out with that statement. And naturally, I will ask what's called the epistemological question. That is a question of how did you know, you know. I will ask them, how do you know that? Well, they may come up with some thing that they remember from the Bible that doesn't even say that. Never says in the Bible that animals have no souls. Jesus Christ never said they have no souls. So they're just have no philosophy. Absolutely no philosophy. And then many people who are religious get stumped because they have no philosophy when they get asked the question, why are so many bad things happening in this world if God exists? And he is good, and he is omniscient, and he is omnipresent, and he is omnipotent. Why is there evil? Well, huh? So that's the point. So in other words, they can quickly lose their faith, or they can be swayed to join one religion and convert to another religion because their belief system is not based on philosophy. And if it's not based on philosophy, it's just very sentimental. Sentimental means you can be swayed one way or the other due to emotions. So it's important to have philosophy. But if one just has philosophy without any heart, then one will just not really be connecting with God because, or understanding anything anyway, because you can just juggle words until the, you know, cow comes home or whatever they say. You can keep juggling words But Krishna says in the Gita, Bhakti Mam Abhijanati, I can only be known by love and devotion. Just like Krishna is a person. So as a person, as any person is, you can't know that person, or the person won't reveal himself or herself or reveal their heart and mind unless you actually have a close relationship with them. So people are demanding that God has to do something for them, but they have no close relationship, or has to reveal himself, or has to show up before them. You know, God, if you exist, you know, just pop in here today, and if you don't pop in here today, you know, I'm going to become an atheist. So both things are actually detrimental. Religion without philosophy is detrimental, and philosophy without a heart is detrimental. And Prabhupada calls it mental speculation. Because with philosophy, you can juggle words and come up with any philosophy. Anyone who's expert in argumentation can take, let's say, either side, if there's two sides of an argument, sometimes arguments have three or four sides, and argue for that side. In fact, that's how lawyers are trained. They're trained to argue both sides of a particular case. That's part of the training. So let's go back to early Greece, where you had these people called sophists. And so they were actually hired to argue about certain things, and they could argue about anything, and who knows whether they believed in anything. And practically the only wise person in Greece, ancient Greece, in Athens at that time, was Socrates, because he was interested in finding out what the ultimate truth was, and he was on, according to Prabhupada, the Brahman platform. So this quote, it's an important quote to remember. Religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation, because it's something that, it's a quote Prabhupada used quite often. The ultimate goal is Krishna, because the philosophers who are also sincerely searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna consciousness. This is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relation to the super self. The indirect process is philosophical speculation by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness, and the other process is directly connecting everything with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. It's revelation. But still one needs philosophy. They can't just like Krishna reveal everything, Hare Krishna, reveal everything, because you can easily be misled if you don't know what you're looking for. Prabhupada gave the example of people who are looking for gold. Now, in America, I think the substance is called pyrite, anyway. So in America, there was this substance, this type of rock called pyrite, which looks like gold, you know, externally. And what happened is they called it fool's gold. The reason they called it fool's gold is that when the American West opened up, people were selling different tracts of land. And some people, in order to cheat other people, sold land that had this pyrite, this fool's gold on it, and said, there's plenty of gold on this land, and here's a special price for you. For you, there is no profit. And people bought it because they didn't know how to test for gold. So if you don't know how to test for gold, you know, you'll just buy fool's gold. Or a diamond, for example. For many people, they'd be fooled by some glass, or even they may be fooled by something called cubic zirconium, which is very close to a diamond, but if you know what you're looking for, it doesn't look like a diamond. Or artificial diamonds that are made through a different process than the natural process. So you have to be an expert jeweler to be able to ascertain which is a real diamond, which is not a real diamond, or which is gold, which is not gold. So if you don't have philosophy, you will be misled. And we saw that in the 1960s, that there were many groups who had crazy philosophies, you know, I'm God, you're God. You know, there was one group, they had a 16-year-old boy, he declared himself to be God, and so many followers. And then this 16-year-old boy did what many 16-year-old boys do, he ran away with a girl. I mean, nothing wrong with that. I mean, you want to run away with someone, that's fine. But if you're God, think twice about it. So anyway, so he ran away with his secretary. And his followers were bewildered. Ooh, what happened to God? And this boy had some mystic powers, so he was able, previous to running away with his secretary, whose name was probably Delilah, previous to running away with the secretary, he was able to make people see flashes of light, maybe by twisting their eyelids, who knows how. But anyway, he was able to do that. Just like in India, there's many people who do all these mystical things. They produce ashes, vibhutis out of the air, or shivalinga out of their mouth, which they've previously swallowed. So anyway, so he, getting back to the story, so he ran away with the secretary, and his followers didn't know what to do, but his mother knew what to do. As they say, mothers know best. So she said, actually, what's coming out now is the truth. She says, this boy, my son, who I love, he's not God. But guess what? He's preparing the way for my other son, who is actually God. You know, of course, all mothers see their son, or sons, as God, but this goes a little too far. And she even went to court to try to get the properties away from her first godson. Not godson, son who was God. And I don't know whether she was successful or not. I mean, this was going on in the 60s. There was someone else from Korea who was an incarnation of Jesus Christ. And he had so many followers. And, I mean, there's so many people. And there's other people who are selling mantras because people just didn't have any philosophy. If you don't have or understand philosophy, you know, logic, we're talking about logic, reason, which begins with epistemology, which means how do you know what you know? That's the first point. And there's other branches of philosophy, epistemology, ontology, teleology. I'm not going to get into philosophy, but basically logic, understanding logic, Aristotelian logic. And unless you have that philosophical base, you could easily be misled in many, many different ways. So Prabhupada actually wanted that. Prabhupada himself was a philosophy major when he went to the university. Okay, so let's continue. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. Krishna consciousness is itself the purifying process. And by the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. But remember, if you're talking about Krishna consciousness, you're also talking about philosophy, which is a part of Krishna consciousness. So it's really important to understand we're talking about karma yoga, jnana yoga, buddhi yoga. Basically, buddhi yoga and karma yoga are parts of Krishna consciousness. In other words, if you're Krishna conscious, you are doing buddhi yoga and karma yoga. On the other hand, and if you don't understand what I'm talking about, you study some logic. On the other hand, if you're doing just karma yoga, you may not necessarily be doing bhakti yoga. But bhakti yoga encompasses everything. But the yoga, other yogas don't encompass everything. So why not do something that encompasses everything? Makes sense, doesn't it? Krishna consciousness, you know, you take care of everything in one fell swoop. You got philosophy. You got sambandha gyan is an important part. That's philosophy. Sambandha gyan means knowing Krishna, the living entities, the material world, the relationship between Krishna and his energies, what the energies are, etc. So until you know that, you can't properly do Abhideya, or practice Krishna consciousness. So it's very important to understand these things. And it's not that hard. It's not required to memorize hundreds or thousands or even any verses, but just to know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and to know some basic philosophy so you don't get cheated by others. Okay, next verse. Nakarmanam manadham banaich karmyam purushoshnute nachasanyasanadeva sinam samadigachati na not karmanam. A prescribed duties anarambat by non-performance naich karmyam freedom from reaction purusha a man ashnute achieves na nor cha also sanyasanat by renunciation eva simply siddham success samadhi gachati attains. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Important verse. So if we stop work, you can't achieve freedom from reaction. And actually you can't stop work anyway. How will you stop work? And just by breathing you're working. Just by walking you're working. Just by eating you're working. You may not have a job and getting paid for it, but just by being alive, you're working and you're interacting with so many living entities that are in the air or on the ground. So you really can't get free from any sort of reaction. I mean, just like walking, you may be harming so many living entities, but just by breathing, you're harming so many living entities. So there's always like action, reaction, action, reaction for everything you do, unless you're Krishna conscious. Very important. Nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Renunciation in this particular case means like sannyas, you know, giving everything up, running, going to the forest, and being a yogi. You can't achieve perfection that way. The only way you can achieve perfection is by Krishna revealing himself to you. And the only way he's going to reveal himself to you is if he trusts you and you have a close relationship with him. And the only way you can do that is by loving him completely, utterly, 100%. Purport. The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of prescribed duties with which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification, one cannot attain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life, sannyas. When Prabhupada was present on this earth, many people wanted to take sannyas just because they got respect, because they were independent, they didn't have to follow someone else's directions. They thought, you know, this is like, I got my cake and I can eat it too, so to speak. But to be able to take the formal renounced order of life, one has to be able to control the senses. And to control the senses, you need some purification. So that's very important. Sannyas. Okay? According to the empirical philosophers, simply by adopting sannyas or retiring from fruitive activities, one at once becomes as good as Narayan. In fact, many of them actually call each other Narayan. Om Namo Narayan. Namo Narayan. Namo Narayan. I offer my respects to Narayan. Narayan is God. So it's not that you become God or become perfect by taking sannyas, by renouncing everything. If you became perfect by renouncing everything, then the hippies in the 1960s would be, you know, way up there. They weren't. They weren't at all. Or the people who just live very simply in the forest would be way up there. It's not like that. One becomes perfect by devotion. And if one takes sannyas and if he is qualified, it's because of his or her devotion. Lord Krishna does not approve this principle. Without purification of the heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. Haven't we seen it? So many swamis. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord, Buddha Yoga. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatopayat. That means in this endeavor there's no diminution and it frees one from the most dangerous type of fear. So even we discussed this before, even a little bit of advancement in Krishna consciousness taken with you to the next life. and you remember gradually, and you take up from that particular point. So there's no loss or diminution. Even a slight performance of such a principle enables one to overcome great difficulties. So even a little bit of bhakti yoga, a little bit of chanting, even taking prasadam one time, puts one on the path to perfection. So, moving along, I think text 5 will be our last text for today. Hold on a second. Nahikaschitchanamapi jatatishchata karma krit karyate yavasak karma sarva prakriti jaya gunai. Na, nor he certainly kaschit anyone kshanam a moment api also jatu at any time. Tishtati remains a karma krit without doing something karyate is forced to do. He certainly avashaha helplessly karma works sarvaha all. Prakriti, jai, born of the modes of material nature, gunahai, by the qualities. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. We are like marionettes. A marionette is a puppet controlled by strings. And the modes of nature are dictating to us, eat this, go there, do this, do that. It's like zombie time. So, and think this, think that. And so we've got to escape from that control of the modes of nature. You have no freedom. People who are controlled by anger or lust or greed or envy, they don't have freedom. But people who are controlled by love, they have freedom. You may say they're controlled by love, but their love is voluntarily expressed, and it can be expressed in a variety of ways. The modes of nature don't have any jurisdiction over someone who really loves Krishna. So this is an important verse. So we have a choice. When it says everyone, it refers to people who are in this material world, who don't have higher knowledge, who don't have the process of Krishna consciousness. They are just being put on this roller coaster and being forced to act in certain ways. And that should evoke a little compassion from us. What did Jesus Christ say when he was talking about the people who put him on the cross? He said, "Forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do." In other words, they didn't know. They're just like not completely innocent. Obviously, they made some choices, but still, they're being forced. And they haven't taken the opportunity to jump out of that situation in which they're forced. Another point about this verse is no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. This is what I mentioned before, that we actually are always active until we're dead. And then we're active next life. So Prabhupada said, it's not a question of embodied life, but it's the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of a spirit soul, the material body cannot move. Obviously, the body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. What is that? Idle mind is a devil's workshop. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes, and to purify, I mentioned this before, it's like wet paint, you're in touch with the wet paint, you're colored by the wet paint, and to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras, that means the books. But if the soul is engaged in its natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. The Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, fifth chapter, affirms this. Chaktvasudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana bhaktvota patitato yadi yatra kava vadra drama bhujamushakim kavarta apto bhajatam sudharmataha. If one takes the Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties in the shastras or execute the devotional service properly, and even though he may fall down from the standard, there is no loss or evil for him. But if he carries out all the injunctions for purification of the Shastras, what does it avail him if he is not Krishna conscious? So in other words, he loses it all. You lose everything. But Krishna will always remember you, and you will always remember Krishna according to the degree that you have attained. So even a moment's Krishna consciousness is more valuable than a whole life for thousands of years, like the trees or like a bellows. We described this before. So the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sannyasa, or any purificatory process, is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure. That's pretty absolute. It is true, because there will be a failure in time. So when you talk about purificatory process, we have purificatory process in Krishna consciousness. It's called chanting. And the process continues, and the process is also the goal. When you're Krishna conscious, you will chant. To become Krishna conscious, you will chant. That's our purificatory process. Tasmat sankirtanam vishno jangamangalamahangasam hatamapi karavya vijikantaka nishkritam. It is the best process, best method of atonement. You don't need to torture yourself or anything like that to purify yourself. And part of that, you follow a few simple restrictive practices. You know, don't get intoxicated and go crazy. Don't have illicit sex and deplete your body energy and be exploited by others. Don't gamble in a frenzy and lose everything that you have. And don't eat meat, fish, and eggs, and be completely uncompassionate towards God's creatures. I mean, nowadays people are talking about, you know, equality, how it's important not to discriminate on the basis, let's say, of race is what's going on right now. So we have the perfect philosophy to apply that we're all God's sons and daughters. We're all related. And the body is just external. You know, what is this? Skin disease? You know, one's attached to their particular race. It's a skin disease. Skin comes off. So, I mean, do we base our whole life upon skin? Pretty stupid. Okay, on that happy note, tomorrow we'll go on to text 6. We did 5 texts today in the 3rd chapter of the Gita. So now we will allow some of you to ask questions. Just let me take off the mute button. So, whoops. All right, you are allowed to ask questions. Who wants to ask a question?
Guruji, I have a question.
Hare Krishna, yeah, so okay.
Namaste.
Namaste.
You were mentioning about how perception is sort of a weak method of understanding the Dharma, and I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit more about that, because it's definitely a certain kind of perception which Arjuna has been, you know, riddled with. He perceives that, oh, I need to do this, I need to do this. And I looked into a little bit about the pramanas that you mentioned, and I know that one argument against perception in, you know, in the Sanskrit literature is anupalabdhi.
It's called pratyaksha, yeah.
Yeah, pratyaksha. So pratyaksha is one pramana, and then there is anupalabdhi, which is non-cognition.
Right.
And I was wondering if maybe it's basically saying like there's lack of perception. And I was basically wondering if you could phrase what Krishna is telling Arjuna as a similar kind of anupalabdhi argument, saying that there is nothing wrong with you doing your duties as a violent kshatriya, you know, there's nothing wrong with that because it's kind of intrinsic to the definition of being a kshatriya. Or is that kind of a similar argument against perception?
Well, you're giving the argument about non-perception.
Yeah,
non-perception. So there's, for our audience, just to tell them what he's talking about, there's something called perception and non-perception. In other words, Non-perception means if you don't perceive something, you can come to certain conclusions. So anyway, Krishna is presenting, he's presenting something like there's nothing wrong with your doing that. So he's using that sort of argument. Yes, you're right. That sort of a epistemology on Arjuna. There's nothing wrong, there's no reaction. You don't have to worry about this. And also, but basically the argument is more positive that based on the Shastra that if a, in the first chapter, of course, in the scripture, Krishna states that based on the Shastra, that if you do your duty as a Kshatriya, then you will achieve at least the heavenly planets.
Oh, wow.
So that's in the second chapter, sorry, the second chapter, which we covered. So Krishna presents that to Arjuna, that even if you don't die, you'll enjoy the earthly kingdom, and if you do your duty, then and you do die, you'll enjoy the heavenly planets, and if you don't do your duty, there's this negative here, right there, and if you don't do your duty, everyone's going to make fun of you, and call you basically Lagavan is the word Krishna is the word Krishna uses, light. In other words, you're a coward. So these are the
Oh,
different
okay.
arguments Krishna uses in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Is that right?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question. Very philosophical. So we could see someone studying here. So anyway, so who else has a question? Nalini
Hare
Khan?
Krishna, Gurudev.
Oh, ooh, there's a big D. Who is this? Oh.
Dhruvnath Das, Gurudev.
Okay. Hare
Sorry
Krishna.
about that. Hare Krishna, Gurudev. Maharaj, actually, I have a question. I wanted to know if, like, we know that in Krishna consciousness, our movement, we have the four varnas. So we usually see that the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, they usually make rapid advancement and they dedicate their whole life in Krishna service. So I wanted to know too. Actually, go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Do we have to come to the stage of prema while on this earth, or can we still be sadhakas and go back?
Yes. First of all, we have devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who wasn't a brahmachari. We have other devotees like Srinivas Acharya, who was married. I mean, there's so many. If you look at our acharyas in our sampradaya, there's so many that were married with families. There's some lady acharyas like Gangamata Gosaini. She wasn't married, of course, who were acharyas. So I would not say it's necessary or even helpful to be a sannyasi or a brahmachari. I mean, from my own experience, of course, I'm in the formal order of sannyas, which you may not know. But anyway, I'm in the formal order of sannyas. So my own experience is that taking sannyas or being a sannyasi did not really help me in my Krishna consciousness, didn't hinder me. I still have to do the same things. I still have to chant. I still have to share Krishna consciousness with others. I still have to be compassionate towards others. I mean, even sannyas, taking sannyas can actually hinder one if one's not ready to do it because one may get overcome by false pride. And as far as brahmachari life is concerned, brahmachari life is usually student life, and from that student life, one will take either sannyas life or grihastha life, and it doesn't indicate one's varna. Now, a sannyasi should be a Brahmin by varna. In the traditional sampradayas, and we don't do this, in order for someone to take sannyas, they would have to have a horoscope with Sagittarius and Lagna. Now, that means Sagittarius would have to be in their first sign, the rising sign, because Sagittarius is the archer in astrology, and that means determination. Actually, I have Sagittarius in my first house, anyway.
You have that in your horoscope, Gurudev.
I know, it's in my horoscope. I know that already. But I didn't know that when I took sannyas. I had my horoscope done later on. So generally, not generally, a sannyasi should be Brahminically inclined. He can do other things, he can teach other things, but his occupation should be teaching. Yajan yajan patan patan dana pratigraha, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's sannyas. But it doesn't really matter. Whether one is sannyasa, brahmachari, kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, sudra kenanai, ye Krishna tattva veda se guru hai. One's a householder. Actually, traditionally, I hate to tell everybody, traditionally the gurus were actually householders, not sannyasis. The reason for that is because the householders could maintain their household, which was an ashram, and train up the children and the brahmacharis properly. Whereas the sannyasis are generally traveling, except when the coronavirus hits, then they can't travel. But the sannyasis are generally traveling, and it doesn't give them so much opportunity to train up their shishyas, because now with the internet, there is more opportunity to do that. So it doesn't matter. Whatever ashram one's in, it really doesn't matter. Ramananda Roy, one of Lord Chaitanya's closest associates, was a grihastha. And he was an incarnation of Vishakha Gopi, combined Vishakha and Arjuna. And so he was a grihastha. So it really doesn't matter. Advaitacharya was a grihastha. There's no indication of Advaitacharya taking sannyas at any particular point in his life. Lord Nityananda was a grihastha, and no indication that he took sannyas at any point in his life. His point in his pastime, sorry. So it really doesn't matter. One just has to love Krishna. It doesn't matter, man, woman, child, it doesn't matter. We don't want to impose these external designations upon spiritual life. Anyone who knows the signs of Krishna can be considered guru. So we should know the signs of Krishna. So one other question someone else has.
Gurudev.
Whoop. There's a fighting for attention now. So Praneshra, you have a question.
Yes. Yeah, like my question is how to protect and understand self when one is making fool?
When one is making food,
Fool.
one is making a fool of himself. Is that the question?
Yes.
Well, it's actually good if you make a fool out of yourself and you remember and you're aware of it, then it makes you a little humble.
No, Gurudev, like the person who wanted to make fool, like one is stealing gold from land in the lecture. I listen in
Oh,
which like the
yeah,
people wanted to make fool of others.
wants to make a fool of us. When someone wants to cheat us, we should be intelligent enough so that we don't get
Yeah.
cheated. That's why we have to start. We have to know what we're looking for. When we're looking for guru, we have to know what we're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking
Yes.
for, you're going to get cheated. Just like when you buy a car, which I've done in the past, then I do a lot of research. And in America, you can look up the what's called the VIN number. I don't know if any of you know what a VIN number is. It's a vehicle identification number, and you could find out if that car has been in any accident, if that car, let's say, has been in a flood, or there's been some problem, or the car has had like 10 owners before, and it's just a lemon. So you could find that out by proper research. And if accepting things blindly is foolish. Accepting guru or instructions or anything blindly due to sentiment is foolish. So it behooves us to find out what are the qualities that we're looking for.
Yes,
And
Krishna.
so study the shastras. Then you'll understand. Then you won't be cheated. Like Prabhupada was never cheated. And we're not just talking spiritually. It's an interesting story. When the devotees first went to India and they accompanied Prabhupada and they had to arrange programs for Prabhupada, they continually got cheated by people who were arranging like pandals in India. And Prabhupada said he never got cheated. He actually went to those same people and got the price down. And you see, with Prabhupada, did so much negotiation, even in the material world, material sphere, and Prabhupada was able to avoid getting cheated, whereas the disciples many times did get cheated financially in other ways like that. So one has to be careful. Don't get cheated. If you get cheated, it's your fault. I hate to say it. You got to take responsibility for it. Okay, so we have to end now. It is time, and tomorrow morning we're giving class here. It is at 6:30 in the morning, a.m. And it will be, that's East Coast, United States, and that's a good time. That's actually a good time for India, because India is 9.5 hours later. And 6:30 in the morning is 8:30 in the morning, Australia. 8:30 in the morning, 10:30 in the morning, New Zealand and Fiji time. So anyway, thank you all for joining us. We're going to be tomorrow morning Zoom for tomorrow morning's Bhagavatam class, and also Facebook Live on PK Goswami Das, my timeline. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.